How's it going, everybody? It is right now 6:05 on Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening now, I guess, technically. Had to stop and get some groceries, or we would have started at 5:30, but it's whatever. Semantics, right? So it's time for another trip down the homeward path, regardless. And that means it's time to tell you that this is the show by me and MTG Dad for all of you at home who are playing, buying, selling, whatever your particular consumption of magic is. You're doing it on a budget, time, financial, whatever the case may be. This is your show. So War of the Spark is upon us. And when I say upon us, I mean we've gotten a ton of cards previewed. The cards are telling the story almost as well as the novel, but that did not stop me from ordering the novel. And there's a really, really good chance next week I'm just going to be doing my reaction episode to the novel. So if you want to avoid story spoilers, I would recommend either trying to get a hold of the novel before then, or finding a way to, you know, whatever it may be. No, I take that back. It won't get there until Thursday, so I won't be able to read it until the week after. So pre-release weekend, I think. No. Next week is pre-release weekend. Anyway, I'll get it right eventually. So, but before I can dive too far into our main topic this week, which is going to be on decks that will the decks that are gaining and or losing the least ground involving War of the Spark, like the decks that need the least amount of work going into War of the Spark Standard. And speaking of things that don't need a lot of work, it doesn't take a lot of work to check out the network over at constructivecriticism.com and just consume all the amazing content that's there. They've gotten preview cards this time around, folks. Spencer Howland got preview cards. Do him a favor, at least click and listen to the episode, even if it's just background noise while you're cleaning the house, because that's a big deal. I've been fussing up a storm over that for a while. So, show him how much you appreciate it. And speaking of showing people how much you appreciate him, check out our sponsor over at inkgaming.com. Use the promo code CCMTG10 at checkout. Get 10% off your order, and you too can appreciate that as you get your sweet, sweet play space accessories. So, be aware, background noise, it is raining here in Paris headed toward McKenzie, Tennessee. Thoroughly disgusting day, really rough work week, but I get to vent to all of you, so let's dive in, shall we? So, Ravnica Allegiance Standard has been kind of a mixed bag. We've seen decks, we've seen the closest approximation to a traditionally healthy standard format that we've had in a very long time. You know, as someone who sat here and endured through Temur Energy, through the dominance of Mono Red and Grixis Energy last year, through Black Red Chain Whirler all summer long, through Aetherworks Marvel, through Felidar Guardian, through Emrakul the Promised End, like, this standard format, so, so good. We've seen decks rise, decks fall. We've seen a healthy, diverse metagame appear. And then we're about to drop, you know, 37 Planeswalkers and a ton of other sweet cards in the middle of it. And let's see what, you know, we're dropping a Planeswalker-sized bomb in the middle of it. And we're going to see what happens in the aftermath. No, we are not getting aftermath cards again. So what I thought it would be a good exercise going into this, we've got, you know, the last handful of cards are going to be coming out to look at and go through lists, get yourself ready for pre-release weekend. As we start preparing for pre-release weekend, I thought it would be a really good idea to kind of take stock in which decks really have the least to gain from War of the Spark. And when I say that, I mean, like, the decks that are functionally going to be the same decks. And then after going through that, I'm gonna just pitch some ideas to kind of get the juices flowing on a potential brewing session. And I I'm to the point, like, I'm probably going to sit down and try to hash out a list for one of these brews either tonight or tomorrow and send it to Spencer so he can maybe play it in the early access event. I don't know. We'll see. So, for starters, first deck I want to talk about is the one that I feel like somehow, some way, probably because it's miserable to play both with and against on Arena, is the best kept secret in Standard right now, and that's Team of Reclamation. And I'm lumping the Gates version and the regular Teemer version together here. Nexus, non-Nexus, all of it's... Like, the general strategy is the same, regardless of what particular engine you're using to get there, right? The idea is to play a controlling posture until you can resolve Wilderness Reclamation with enough lands or enough copies of Wilderness Reclamation to do something to just kill your opponent. Right? Now, the Guildgate engine makes it a little bit easier to control the board because the card Gates Ablaze is just miles above the power level of the other board wipes you get in Teemer colors. Like, it's not even close. I guess technically we could throw the Bant Reclamation decks in here too, but they are literally all the way in on Nexus of Fate, and you're winning with Teferi, and that's just a whole different thing, and I hate it. So I don't want to talk about it. But Wilderness Reclamation as an archetype, I don't know that it's getting any main deck help because at its core, it's a combo control deck, right? You want to adopt a reactive posture early in the game until you get to a point where you can kind of swing things back in your direction by just overwhelming your opponent in one big turn. Now, that one big turn may involve casting Nexus of Fate and taking another big turn. That one big turn may involve casting an explosion for a ton pointed at your opponent's face. That one big turn may involve just playing a ton of spells with a Nib-Mizzet in play and knowing you're going to get to untap after drawing all these cards and being able to bury your opponent that way. You know, whatever it is you're trying to do that's going to kill your opponent, the basic premise of the deck is resolve Wilderness Reclamation and something that will either kill your opponent or at least put them so far behind they can't win. And I cannot tell you how many times that card has been Nib-Mizzet. It's so good. Casting Nib-Mizzet and untapping my lands feels like cheating. Full stop. Feels like cheating. It should not happen. And it's to the point, like, I've started experimenting with the Gates package, both in paper and on Arena. Arena, because I did not have the wild cards to get on my lands yet. I'm still working on that. And in paper, because while I'm doing it on Arena, I may as well be as close to consistent as I can across both platforms. You know, play the same thing in both places, you get better at it a lot faster. But I digress. Teemer Reclamation as a strategy doesn't get a whole lot of main deck help, except in the case, like, you can slot in some different spot removal spells or, you know, customize some slots, but, like, from a fundamental level, the deck's still going to be the same. So, you know, if you've been waiting to pull the trigger on a deck for Standard, I would highly recommend Teemer Reclamation. I don't think it's going anywhere. The only potential caveat is with all the Planeswalkers entering the format, we may see an uptick in main deck non-creature spell counters, which makes life a little bit more hostile to Teemer, because countering your Wilderness Reclamation, countering your board wipe, countering your card draw, whether it's Chemister's Insight or Guild Summit, like, countering your explosion for a ton, it's all kind of a big deal. And I get that. But I think the deck's still really good. Combo control is a space that I love to occupy in a format. Being able to, you know, diagnose and react. And then you get to a point where instead of trying to stretch the game out and create a sense of inevitability, like you do with a normal control deck with something like Teferi or some kind of big stupid creature, your sense of inevitability is that your opponent has to be terrified for their life the longer you get to live. Like, that's a great place to be. So, you know, that's kind of the first deck I really wanted to touch on. Now, the second deck kind of goes hand in hand here. I really, really like where the Spell Pierce Dive Down decks are going into this new format, potentially. Planeswalkers are non-creature spells, so Spell Pierce just kind of naturally gets better because there's going to be incentives to play more Planeswalkers. There's going to be players playing more removal that interacts with Planeswalkers, which is also typically non-creature, which makes your Spell Pierces better. But more than that, from a general overarching fundamental standpoint, like, the deck is still the same thing, right? That's not changing. It's not going anywhere. We still get to do the thing where we play some cheap threats and then back them up with counter magic until the opponent's dead. Or if you're playing the Drake's version, you know, playing the Drake so that you can turbo adapt your Terramander and make giant Enigma and Crackling Drakes, you just play a ton of cheap spells early in the game to craft the game into a state where you can just play a big stupid thing every turn until your opponent dies. Whatever it is you're doing, I don't think either of those things are bad either. Like, the mono blue deck, still really good at pressure and planeswalkers. There's not a lot of planeswalkers in this set that I've seen so far. Now, I can't, that's my caveat here, right? I haven't seen a lot of planeswalkers out of the set so far that protect themselves well from specifically flying creatures. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit more about a different variation on the tempo shell that I'm going to get to later on, but, like, Mono Blue and Isidrake both still seem really good. Sometimes the best way to deal with planeswalkers is to kill the person that controls them, and being able to do that while keeping them from curtailing your development with counter magic and disruption, like, that's a great place to be. The next one I'd like to touch on is the aggro decks. Like, I don't actually think the aggro decks are going anywhere. There's more of an incentive to lean into the mid-range space because of all the planeswalkers, and there's a lot more big, stupid payoffs. But, as has been said on the internet countless times and will be said on the internet until the end of the internet, there is no substitute for the virtual card advantage of killing your opponent. And that's what mono red, mono white, mono green, Gruul do as well as anybody. There's even been variations coming along here at the end of the format of a green-blue stompy, kind of a mono-green deck that splashes the blue, but, like, the blue is actually a relevant payoff this time instead of just being, like, negate. Cards like Departed Deckhand are actually just really good in that shell where your opponent already has to answer everything and anything they have will kill nearly anything you have. And, you know, there's, like, little bits and pieces of incremental value. Like, if they're down to exactly Vraska's Contempt, it's really awkward when they have to point that at your deckhand and it just dies and they don't gain the two life. Because that can mean the difference between a win or a loss based on the, you know, how the rest of your deck goes, how the top of your deck flows from there. But just regardless, like, again, there's no substitute for the virtual card advantage of your opponent not having life left anymore. Kind of a big deal. And, I mean, the white deck, the white weenie deck gets to pick up Gideon Blackblade, who's just actually really good in that shell. Is he super exciting? No, but he's a 3-mana 4/4 that, like, forces particular kinds of things to happen. Like, the, you're not in on Gideon Blackblade for the -6. The -6 is a nice touch. You're in on Gideon Blackblade for the +1 and the fact that he's a 3-mana 4/4. That's what you're in for Gideon for. That's what you want. So, like, I don't think the card's bad. I think the card's pretty good. It slots in over some of the other 3-drops I've tested in mono-white. And that's to say the non-Benelish Marshall ones, because basically all of the ones I've tested that weren't exactly Benelish Marshall or History Benalia, like, okay, they're bad, basically. History Benalia, Benelish Marshall, and then maybe you go, like, instead of going Jam 4-4, you go, like, 3-3-2, Marshall, History, Gideon. Maybe you do that. Have a little bit more fat at the top of your curve. Kind of a sleeper in all of this is Boros Angels, which picks up a really interesting dynamic against a lot of these control decks. The go-to kind of spot removal spell early in games for a lot of these control decks has very quickly become cast down because it's so good at killing basically anything anybody's playing that costs 3 mana or less. Well, Boros Angels picks up Feather the Redeemed. Even if you never gain any actual value off the fact that she's going to recycle your spells that target her or any of your other creatures while she's in play, even if you never gain any value out of that, which you can, because it's absolutely silly to Deafening Clarion and get it back. It's just a thing that you can do right now with Feather. I don't know if y'all are aware. It's super sweet. But I digress. Like, the fact that now you have a curve at 3, 4, and 5 mana, none of which gets cast down, that's super relevant. The fact that Feather is a 3-4 instead of a 3-3 like Resplendent Angel, meaning it doesn't die to Lightning Strike or Skewer the Critics or Wizard's Lightning, super relevant. The fact that it's another angel you can slot into the deck that can pick up lifelink to just slam the door shut in the face of the red deck, super relevant. The fact that Feather's one of my favorite characters out of the entirety of Ravnica lore, not super relevant to you, but it is super relevant to me. We'll get around to that later. But I think the angel shell, either like Boros, Jeskai, Mardu, Abzan, whatever it is you're in for angels as a mid-range deck, I think that's still fine. Being able to curve against, you know, Sultai mid-range or the various forms of ETB mid-range decks, being able to curve to Kotli Honor Guard into 3-4 flying, 3-4 flying, 5-5 flying that pumps my other two creatures. You just play these individually really efficient creatures, and the fact that they also turn off some portion of your opponent's removal, not necessarily all of it, like even the Esper list we have right now are like cast down, mortify Kaya's Wrath in some number, and then the counter magic and the card draw and then additional specialty stuff in the board, but just being able to blank some of it with a threat that threatens to kill your opponent. Imagine that, a threat threatens people. Who would have guessed? Certainly not me. But, like, the deck just seems really, really good. And being a deck, again, full of flying creatures, with these at three mana and above, you gain some leverage in a format that is wanting to specialize in planeswalkers, potentially. The more planeswalkers are valuable, the more valuable the mechanic of flying and evasion in general becomes. And that leads us to the next deck, which is kind of the opposite end of the mid-range spectrum, where Angels is kind of it's an aggressively slanted pure mid-range deck, but it's more of a reactive one in the aggro matchup. Like 100% of the time. On the other end of the spectrum, we have Gruul, which I don't think actually loses any ground. I think it may actually just get better. Because if the format slows down and these aggro decks, like, if you start seeing the aggro decks like White Weenie get stonewalled by all these planeswalkers and all these mid-range decks, you might actually be able to cut Chain Whirler and play a better mana base. I know it sounds like sacrilege, but it's a thing we might be able to do. It's not irrelevant. Smooth mana is a good thing. Now, I know there's going to be a bunch of people that will tell me, hey, Adam, what do you know about smooth mana bases when Gruul's been really, really, really good this whole season? Like, once the list started to pile in, especially with the Frank Carson list from the Mythic Championship, the Jund Warriors, that kind of became the standard. Like, that deck's still good. I think it's fine. But the incentive to play Chain Whirler goes down if the format slows down. If the card is not doing more than just plinking the planeswalkers they have for one and then putting a body on the board, like if it's not actively gaining you advantage as the aggressive deck, I don't think it's worth playing. Highly unpopular opinion, I'm sure. That's just me. If it's not doing the job it's in the deck to do, I don't think I actually want it. But Gruul as an archetype is still really, really good. Gruul Spellbreaker is a messed up magic card. Domri, Chaosbringer, I should specify because we also have the new one. But 4-mana Domri, especially in your control matchups, super good magic card. Scargan Hellkite, low-key, super good magic card. It's most of the time, it's exactly what Glorybringer was. It's a 4-4 flying ace for 5. That's fine. The fact that so many of your creatures trample, the fact that you pick up Ronus. God Eternal Ronus is so good in this shell. I want to just throw that out there. Ronus is super good here. Being able to just come down, like, the initial reaction to Ronus was, oh, it's win more, but there were a lot of people who said the same thing about the original Ronus. Well, if you've already got a creature that's power 4 or greater so that you can turn him on, you should be winning anyway. Well, guess what? Those same people are the ones saying the new Ronus is win more. That is a 5-drop that just kills your opponent if it resolves. Like, if your opponent doesn't play absolutely perfectly and keep your board clear, Ronus resolving just kills them. You double the power of your creatures in play, to say nothing of using Ilharg to raise board. Where you attack with Ilharg, put in the Ronus tapped and attacking, Ronus doubles the power of Ilharg if nothing else is on the table. You know, Ilharg into Ronus might actually be enough to make a Rhythm of the Wild deck playable. Kind of a Fires deck, if you will. Maybe that's a direction Gruul can go. I'm starting to go into my next segment, so to speak, here, but I mean, I think we're in a good spot. Like, Gruul's still fine. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Esper Acuity and its cousin Esper Control, because both of those decks are also going to be fine. Like, they pick up a spell that reads, for a black and a white, exile target permanent that with converted mana cost 4 or greater. The card is called D-Spark. For a black and a white, instant speed, exile a 4-drop or greater. That is such a tempo beating. Oh my goodness, that is a beating. And that card, to me, is almost exactly what the doctor ordered for a deck like Esper Mardu Hero, to the point that I'm probably going to have to get in on that. Like, the Hero Precinct 1 decks might actually be good enough now. Like, there's so much just little incremental things that have come up over the last few spoilers. And a lot of that value is concentrated at uncommon. That's the part that gets me excited the most. Is the fact that I don't have to play, you know, I don't have to shell out a ton of cash to get all these cards I'm excited about. You know, Saheeli, Ashiok, both uncommons. Ashiok, the planeswalker that is actually just a middle finger to the Legacy format. Because you just turbo into it, you turbo into Ashiok, and they just sit there and tell your opponent they don't get to do the things you do in Legacy. Because you shut off both library searching and graveyard interactions. Oh my goodness, that card's so good. But, you know, maybe there's some room now. Like, there's So I guess like that kind of does it for the decks that are not changing a ton. Like the decks are fundamentally going to be the same, right? All the ones we talked about. Team of Reclamation is still going to be Team of Reclamation. It's just going to have a few new cards. The tempo decks, mono blue, maybe blue splash tempo. Fundamentally, still largely the same deck. Is it Drake? Still going to be the same deck. The red aggro, white aggro decks. Still going to be fundamentally the same decks. Oketra, really good Magic card. Probably not going to see much, if any, play in the actual aggro white decks. Is that card absolutely bananas for something like Selesnya Tokens? Oh my heavens, yes. That card is amazing. But I don't know how well positioned that deck is going to be. But, you know, then we have the decks that are like somewhere in the middle. They were like medium playable, but they felt like they needed something that maybe got it. You know, Gruul was obviously just really good the whole way through. But then it also gets to pick up Ronas and Ilharg as like a potential like combo kill for your aggro deck at the top of your curve. You know, Boros Angels picks up Feather and additional removal. Like, the fact that you can play the Solar Blast, I can't remember the name of the card, but it's the Justice Strike for everybody. Every creature suffers a Justice Strike, and none of your angels die except, well, your Lyra would die and your Resplendent would die. That's why we're in for Feather, right? Feather doesn't die to that. Shalai doesn't die to that. Maybe it's Naya Angels. Maybe that's where the technology is. But I'm straying again. You know, the Hero Precinct 1 decks, they're still going to be fundamentally the same. They just finally maybe got some cards that will help push them over the top to make them really competitive instead of just kind of medium against control and reclamation and just like Stone Cold Nuts against like red aggro and white aggro. Like that's kind of the space the hero decks were occupying. They were really good against aggro. And then as the format became more interested in either end of the spectrum between aggro and control, and the two of those did a reasonable job of kind of bleeding out most of the inefficient mid-range in the middle, made it harder for a deck like Hero to exist, which is unfortunately a mana inefficient mid-range deck. I love it to death. One of my favorite decks in the format right now. But it was squeezed out by the fact that it's a little bit hard to get the ball rolling. Like, it's a mid-range deck whose cards are better together. And that's kind of where the problem is. Maybe picking up some additional cards that are more versatile help with that. Maybe. I don't know. So going from the decks that aren't fundamentally changing to decks that can. I'm not going to say they will, but they can. The first one is the blue-black tempo shell that I have been really working hard on for the last little while. Now, for those of you who've been following either in the Facebook group or just messaging me and stuff, y'all know what I'm talking about. I took the mono-blue tempo list, splashed enough black mana to be able to support cards like Thief of Sanity, Drill Bit, and some hard removal and cast down and Price of Fame. I went with Price of Fame over Vraska's Contempt as a mana consideration so that I didn't have to run more swamps. Right now it's two swamps and the eight duels, you know, four shocks, four drowned catacombs. I didn't want to go too far down the line into black and lose access to all these amazing double blue cards that we have in the format. So I wanted to make sure the mana was as smooth as I could make it. And, I mean, let's be honest, the mono blue stuff is good without the black mana, and then having access to the odd black spell here and there to just kind of swerve on the opponent is what's been the, for lack of a better term, the hook for the deck. You know, they're expecting a Tempest Gen, and you just drop a Drowned Catacomb and jam a Thief, and they're like, oh, well, that just attacks me from a whole different angle. Now I have to kill that. Instead of maybe trying to create a situation where your Curious Obsession, like, whatever the case may be. And then having access to actual removal in a matchup where, you know, let's say we're playing against Boros Angels and they jam the Lyra and you just have the Price of Fame to kill her for two mana and surveil two, and then swing in and get your connection, you know, your connection bonus, if you will. Your bonus connection speed? That's a bad joke. But, you know, you get in, you look, get their cards off the Thief or get your card off the Curious Obsession. That's what I've been doing. But the more I look at this set, the less incentivized I am to stay down that road. As low as I was on Dreadhorde Invasion not that long ago, I'm actually a little bit high on it specifically for a blue-black tempo shell. Now, let me tell you why. It's not Bitter Blossom. It's a really bad Bitter Blossom. But it's not as bad as a card like Goblin Assault that never gave you the defensive option. So, like, from a fundamental standpoint, it can do a lot of the same things that Bitter Blossom did. Not as well, because it doesn't generate additional value in, like, the power and toughness it generates isn't additional bodies, it's just actually additional power and toughness every turn. But similar to Bitter Blossom, it's really good at force fielding one big attacker that doesn't have evasion until you get to a point where it can start to snowball. And to me, that's kind of been what the MO for this tempo shell has been, is creating enough threats that snowball really well that you just want to stick one of them. And then you do the job of protecting it as best you can until they blow it up, and then we just go right back to it. Well, for all the bluster about Dreadhorde Invasion a couple episodes ago, I actually think the card's fine here as a 2-drop because it's not a creature. So it not dying to cards like Cast Down to Lava Coil, yeah, they can kill the token, but then I just get another one. I just keep applying little incremental amounts of pressure. Alongside Terramander, Thief of Sanity, Saheeli, and then just a litany of interactive elements. You know, maybe we end up having to trim a little bit on some of the other stuff. You know, Drill Bit's really good with all those extra creatures, but if the format's gonna swing potentially in a direction that wants more non-creatures anyway, maybe it's time for main deck duress instead. So, you know, this is the one I was talking about when I said I may have to come in and sketch out a list real quick and ship it, because I have a feeling it's going to be something that might have some legs. I could be way off base. I'm almost certainly way off base. But I think it's got something. Also, having access to Ashiok against, you know, a handful of specific cards is pretty sweet. But, Saheeli doing, you know, working in tandem with something like a Terramander. Because I don't know if y'all are remembering, I may have mentioned this in the last episode, I can't remember, but if you Saheeli, you know, if your Saheeli makes some tokens, and then you use one of the, you use Saheeli's minus two on one of those tokens, and that token becomes a copy of Terramander, that means you can adapt it. And then even after the Saheeli effect wears off, you still just have another 5/5, beating your opponent down. While your Dreadhorde Invasion continues to grow, while you continue drawing additional cards, like whatever it is you're in for. You know, it. I'm never so fond of my pet projects that I'm not willing to kind of pick them apart at a fundamental level if I think they can be improved upon, and this is no exception. And then I think the Feather the Redeem deck may have some legs. Now, in Commander, it's obviously insane, right? Because you have the Radiance cards, so you can target one of your creatures, give the bonus to all of them, and then get it back at the end of the turn. That's super good. But in Standard, even, like, I almost want a player in Jeskai just so that I can buy back a Dive Down once. I just want to buy back a Dive Down once. And then, like, The pump spells are reasonable. The interaction I mentioned earlier with Deafening Clarion, that's reasonable. Being able to both kill everything that's smaller in toughness than Feather and give something else lifelink so that you can buy back the Deafening Clarion. You can just keep looping this 3-damage board sweeper. Like, maybe that's a deck that can just actually be built kind of around these kinds of interactions instead of just kind of slotting them in. I don't know. And then we talked a little bit at the shop not that long ago about... what was it? Now I'm drawing a blank. I'm sorry, everybody. Anyway, you know, the two big ones. Blue-Black Tempo straying away from Siren Storm Tamer, Curious Obsession, and friends, and more toward kind of occupying the space of a control deck that just has cheap threats. You know, Terramander kind of fills the Delver of Secrets role. Dreadhorde Invasion does a really bad but reasonable enough Bitter Blossom impression. Thief of Sanity's still just a messed up Magic card, and then Blue and Black just have this litany of interaction and creature removal and disruption and counter magic. So maybe there's something there. Maybe there's something I can work on. I'm going to try. And if it doesn't work, I still have the shell that I've been playing, and I think that deck is still fine. But it's gonna be something I want to work on. So... speaking of things to work on, you can work on getting in touch with me every week on Twitter at HomewardPathMTG. On Facebook, my name is Adam Spain. We have the Facebook group, the Homeward Pathfinders. If you are a patron of the show, you gain access to the Patron Pathfinders Discord, where we actually discuss episode topics along with a lot of other stuff. The discussion has not been super lively yet, but that's because there's not a lot of people. So... I would definitely welcome more of you. And speaking of Patreon, if you would like to become a patron of the show, if you feel like you are getting enough out of the show that you would like to donate to help me make it better and, you know, gain some amount of influence in helping me do that, you can do so at patreon.com/homewardpathmtg. Show's always going to be free, but again, if you feel like you've gotten enough back out of it that you want to help me improve it, please feel free to donate. I will gladly make sure that... those funds are put to good use. The most recent usage of the funds was the headset that I am recording on right now. So, you know, I say little things, but it's not little. It's very important things. And with that, all the shills out of the way, everything else I normally do out of the way, let's go on into the show. My favorite segment every week, #MTGDadJokes. I love a good pun. I try to sprinkle them in as I can throughout the show, but, you know, things happen. So, did I do that one last week? Yeah, I did. Okay. So, a regular entry here. We have Mark Rosewater's Tales from the Pit. This is number 2021. And the card art pictured is Dovin's Veto. For those of you who don't know, the card is blue and a white, can't be countered, negate. It's exactly what the card is. It's a negate that can't be countered for more specific mana. Also, low-key, another card that, like, Esper and Jeskai Hero really, really, really wanted. Just another counter spell that they can play that will trigger a hero and also be a good card. But it says, the real tragedy of War of the Spark is we could have called this Dovin's Ban. Because Dovin Bond. Anyway, I love it. You are a gift. You are a gift to your game sometimes, Morrow. And then we have Tales from the Pit, number 2023. It says Jaya Ballard's always workshopping new flavor text. It says, nice to heat you. I guess I'll combust a move. Care to meet an old flame? Any of these working for you? Anyone? And as someone who absolutely loved all of the old Jaya Ballard flavor text, I approve wholeheartedly. And the last but not least, we have the one that I made yesterday. So it requires a little bit of context. It began with Spencer reacting to a Finale of Devastation, the green one, which, for those of you who don't know, is green, green X. Search your library and or graveyard for a creature with converted mana cost X or less and put it onto the battlefield. If you search your library this way, shuffle it. If X is 10 or more, creatures you control get plus X and gain haste until end of turn. So that's a super big splashy effect, right? It's like green. It's like worse Green Sun Zenith meets slightly worse Crater Hoop Behemoth. But like they're one card put together. And Spencer says, this actually seems pretty good in Gate Ramp now that I think about it. And there was a little bit of back and forth about it. And Spencer said, you know, the deck plays both high impact creatures like Archway Angel and undercosted creatures like Gatebreaker Ram. So you can play this as a one or two of already and tool the deck to play more to really take advantage of the fact that you're ramping so much mana with cards like Growth Spiral, Gift of Paradise, and Circuitous Root. You know, maybe that's another one that has some legs I forgot to mention, especially for the budget-minded players. Keep an eye on Gates. Still, like, way dumber than it looks like it should be. It looks like you're playing a limited deck, but you're not. But I digress. Let's set up the joke. He says, I could be wrong, though. My first thought, if it was horrible because it's not Krasis, but then it gives you a more interesting top end. And Eric Landis replied, said, being able to haste out a ram in the late game is a powerful thing. I said, you could say you're ramming it down their throat. Huh? 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 Okay. With all of that out of the way, I'll see myself out now. Thanks for listening, everybody. I really enjoy bringing this to you every week. Depending on when the novel gets here and when I have time to read it, we will get a story reaction episode in. Because I love the lore of this game, and I love sharing that passion for the lore of this game with other people, and I don't care who knows it. So, I'll catch y'all next week. We'll have something to talk about. Maybe it'll be some spicy brews. Maybe it'll be some story reactions. We'll find out together. Until then, stay after it. I'll catch you then, and I'm going to head in the house.